This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
A team of Australian researchers have recently gained access to secret Indonesian military documents that reveal the extremely dubious tactics of the Indonesian military in West Papua, formerly known as Irian Jaya. The report, called Anatomy of an Occupation, is being launched tonight at Sydney Uni. Camelia Webb-Gannon is a PhD student at the West Papua Project at the Centre for Peace and Conflict Studies, and she's one of the authors of the report. Thanks for your time this morning, Cami.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Now, you've gained access to some pretty serious military documents for this report. How did you get hold of those, and what did those documents reveal?
We were passed the report in February of this year by a trusted source. We can't really say anything more other than to say that we've gone to great lengths to verify the information in the reports to the extent that we can, and in the documents. And the documents are extremely comprehensive. So there's kind of a range of things that we have. A couple of them, and in particular one, is a 97-slide PowerPoint presentation which details, we think it might be a Kopassus document, which is the Indonesian elite special forces. It gives an overview of their perspective of what the West Papuan separatist movement is comprised of. So basically it comprehensively describes the numbers of people involved in the separatist movement, and those include guerrilla fighters as well as civil society leaders, and the amount of weapons that they have, and also the foreign supporters. And the lists are somewhat ridiculous in some instances. So it kind of even lists people like Naomi Robson from Channel 7. But so it shows the degree of paranoia that the Indonesian armed forces have over the West Papua movement. But it also concludes that nearly everybody, including church leaders in West Papua, are separatists.
And yeah, right.
That is just because they're concerned about human rights.
Exactly. So if someone speaks up about human rights, then they will be labelled a separatist.
Exactly. That's the gist of it, yeah.
But is there widespread support for independence, or is this something, I mean, how seriously does the Indonesian government take this?
Well, they take it very seriously, and probably for good reason, because there is widespread support for independence in Papua as far as we can tell. And all three of us have been to Papua and have done pretty extensive research on the independence movement. But a lot of that is because of the way that the Indonesian government and armed forces deal with West Papuans. And they basically, what we conclude in our report is that West Papua is an occupied territory, and it's kept under Indonesian occupation through extreme military surveillance and other pretty horrific tactics.
So what kind of tactics, I mean, without kind of grossing us out too much, what kind of tactics are the Indonesian military using in West Papua to try to sort of keep this movement, I guess, under control?
Yep. They use a whole range, and I think you can kind of look at the more benign tactics such as the bribes, and even what you could call inducement. So going out, doing health clinics in the highlands and in rural populations, and playing soccer games with local people. But you can kind of see through this. They're trying to win hearts and minds, but not trying very hard, because at the same time they're trying to socialize different policies, such government policies, such as not raising the Morning Star flag, which is a flag of huge significance to West Papuans. It's their kind of nationalist symbol, which can land you in 15 years in jail if you do raise that flag. Other tactics include infiltration, and so basically paying off West Papuans to be spies on the Papuan movement, and getting them to report on different meetings that West Papuans are having. It could be anything from, you know, planning a rally to trips to Jakarta to meet with other West Papuan human rights supporters. And then you've also got the much more horrific tactics such as torture, which is kind of a public spectacle intended not just to hurt the person that might be tortured, but to keep all other West Papuans who hear about it in fear of resisting.
And I understand that rape is still a fairly widely used tactic.
It is, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Your report also touches on the fact that hundreds of thousands of non-Melanesian Muslim Indonesians are flooding into West Papua and kind of overwhelming the predominantly Christian indigenous population. Does that cause additional tensions?
Definitely. I mean, just in 2010, West Papuan, Indigenous West Papuans became a minority in their own homeland. And so...
Wow, that's been predicted for a while. I didn't realise it had actually happened.
According to statistics that have been analysed by Jim Elmsley from the West Papua Project, that's and those are kind of based on the Indonesian census that he's been looking at, which was the last census was about 10 years ago, but he's extrapolated the figures. And so that's what he's pretty much figured out. This has huge implications for West Papuan Indigenous cultures, as well as, if you go to West Papua, you definitely, in a geographically Melanesian landscape, but the sounds of the mosques and the call to prayer and the Muslim population is quite a different vision than you would get just over the border in Papua New Guinea, for instance. And
yeah. So
a lot of West Papuans do resent what they call the Islamicization and, the Indonesianization of West Papua. And I guess that's because they feel that their own cultures are very much the Indigenous cultures, and then their Christian belief that most West Papuans hold is under threat from the transmigration.
Yeah, just the sheer numbers, I guess, and the speed of which people have migrated
exactly.
Doesn't sort of allow much time to adjust in the normal way that it does when you sort of have a controlled level of immigration. I just wanted to ask, what does your report recommend in terms of how the Australian government should be responding to, I guess, some of these abuses by the military and some of their tactics?
We have a pretty simple recommendation, which is that Australia really needs to stop funding, giving military aid to COPASIS. So basically the Australian SAS, the Australian Special Forces are training the Indonesian Special Forces in anti-terrorism techniques, and we want the Australian government to seriously reconsider this until COPASIS have been brought to account for the abuses that they've been involved in West Papua and elsewhere. And we don't think that the Australian government should be providing any military aid to Indonesia until this has happened. Otherwise, they're basically complicit in the abuses and the suffering of the Melanesian people in West Papua.
Yeah, okay. Now, you've got the official launch of this report tonight. You've got Mark Davis from Dateline coming along. What are the details? Is it open to the public?
It's open to the public. It's at the Maclay Museum, which is at the University of Sydney, right near the footbridge. Starts at 6 o'clock. It goes until 7:30.
And how can people get a copy of the report if they're interested in finding out more?
It should be on our website by the end of the day today. That's the Centre for Peace and Conflict Studies website, if you go to the West Papua Project page. And one of the original documents, the PowerPoint slide that I mentioned before, will also be up there.
Okay. Thanks for taking some time to tell us all about this today, Cammy.
It's a pleasure. Thanks, Katrina.
You're welcome. That's Camilla Webb-Gannon. She's one of the authors of the report. It's called Anatomy of an Occupation. It's being launched tonight at Sydney Uni at the Maclay Museum.
This has been a Hope 103.2 podcast. For helpful articles, station news, videos, devotional emails, and more podcasts, visit hope1032.com.au.